from my heart and from my hand. Why don't people understand my intention?
Computer running slow?
I'm waiting.
Caught a virus?
Does your computer seem to have a life of its own?
Malfunction. Need input.
The computer guru is here.
Thank God you're here.
Call in now.
751-1041.
That's 751-1041.
Now it's Mike Swanson,
your computer guru.
On 1041 The Truth.
Tucson's News Talk FM.
Hello and welcome to the Computer Guru Show. My name's Mike, here to deal with your technology needs and treat you like a real person in the process. So far, Crystal has racked up two epic fails in a row, and the show's only, we're about a minute into it already. So, how you doing today, Crystal?
Other than losing my brain for a minute right there, I'm good.
All right. Yeah. So, for those of you who have listened often, it's a little bit of a... there's a pattern going on here where Crystal epic fails the beginning of the show the last 3 weeks in a row. So it's awesome. So if you want to be part of the show, 751-1041, we'd love to talk with you and talk about any technology issues you might be having. And I'll be nice. I'll even try to resolve it without calling you any names or anything because I normally don't call people names anyway. Randall is out today because he has got some family emergencies that he's dealing with. So... best of luck to Randall's family, and hope everything's going well for him. There's all kinds of stuff in the news today.
To go back to my failing really quick, since I was on the phone a second ago,
mm-hmm.
At least I've gotten all the fails out of the way at the beginning of the show.
We'll see.
Well, no, I'm just saying, like, the past couple weeks, it was all at the beginning.
Yes, all right.
So and then I was good for the rest of the show.
So now you're doing great.
Yeah.
Do you know that one of the things that you can find on Google Street View is dead people?
No.
Apparently. And
are people looking for dead people?
No, they just happen to be just laying on the side of the road and the Google truck drives by and takes pictures.
And does nothing about it.
It was in Brazil. And apparently, from the other pictures I saw that they took, there's people laying all over on the streets anyway. Those just happen to be less alive than the other ones.
So in Brazil, people just lay around on the street?
I think there's a lot of that, according to the pictures I saw.
Wow.
It's unknown whether or not the driver of the Google vehicle actually even noticed, you know, because they're just driving around doing their thing. So I don't know.
If I saw somebody lying down by the side of the street, I would automatically think there's something wrong with them. But either maybe the streets are really clean in Brazil and people take naps on them a lot.
Oh, no.
Or they're
no,
just,
no.
You know, really drunk and passing out.
Certainly did not look clean.
Wow.
Who knows? It's what can I say? If you never mind, Google's taking pictures of dead people, which is awesome. Now there was somebody last year, actually, some kid who was faking it, laying on the ground, and got all kinds of attention about it.
Because he was faking being dead.
Yeah, and okay. Yeah, they got Google all up in arms about it. You know, people were all upset that you know they were filming dead children on the street, and it turns out the kid was faking it. These guys are not faking, apparently. I wonder how they verified that. Maybe they went back later.
Yeah, did they? Yeah, exactly. Was somebody like, hey, that person's dead? Or was it really obvious once you could actually see, like, look at it?
It was fairly obvious. Fairly obvious. So are you irritated by commercials being louder than they should be? You've probably heard about this in the news. The CALM Act is what Congress is passing, a law that says that commercials cannot be louder.
Than the show when you're watching TV?
Right.
Oh, that happens all the time. You have to play with the volume.
Yeah, I always thought it was a rule, by the way. I always thought, wow, it should be a rule already. I don't think there needs to be a law about it. Here's the bigger issue of it for me, though. I mean, the bigger problem for me is that there are certain salesmen, in order to sell their product, think that the only way to sell that product is to scream really loud at you.
That's true.
Rather than have a product that's worth paying attention to, they think that they have to amp up the volume on your commercial, you know, to get your attention. And it's just like websites with music, by the way, for me. Immediately, if I go to a website and it starts playing music of any kind, I am immediately off that page. I don't even read it. I just close it because it's, don't do that to me.
Yeah, that is pretty annoying. I mean, I don't have that issue a lot because I don't have speakers on. Well, I mean, okay, that sounds...
You don't have that issue at all if you don't have speakers.
Yeah, well, okay, because usually when I'm I don't know. Usually when I'm on the computer, it's here, and unless I'm doing something involving audio, the speakers are turned off.
Yeah, that's true.
So sometimes I'll be looking something up or, you know, doing stuff that it needs to be done, and but, it'll be playing stuff, but I won't even
The point is for me is that if you're going to have a commercial, mm-hmm. you should be selling a product that's worth selling, rather, but that can get people's attention on its own merits, rather than just for screaming sure. at them. And even making it quieter might get your attention.
Just because you're so used to it being loud.
Right, because if you can't go any louder, try quieter. Maybe that'll make people go, hey, what's going on? The louder thing is very irritating, though, especially like if you've got, in certain channels, you know, the regular programming is fairly quiet, so you got to turn it way up to hear it in the first place. Mm-hmm. And then you have this commercial that's running at, you know, 900 decibels and blows your windows out. That's a little irritating. It bothers me. So I'm glad that they're putting some sort of rule in there, but I don't think it should come down from Congress. I think it should be more like
seems more of an FCC thing.
Well, the networks should say, hey, if you want to run commercials on our network, or the individual stations should say that, then they have to, you know, to fall in line with these particular volume levels. I don't like the idea of government being involved in anything as far as rules are concerned when it comes to free speech. So, because somebody's going to make the argument that it's a free speech thing. You know, they're going to say, well, I have the right to say it louder than anybody else. I think that the network should set some sort of rules up that say, these are the volume levels you have to hit, or we'll auto-level it for you. And it seems to me that technology exists. I mean, right here on this board, there's volume leveling information right here in front of me.
No, there's not.
So, there is.
It's all a figment of your imagination.
Oh, Crystal. it bothers me that there's rules being put in place that it should be, first of all, common sense. And then secondly, the network should control it or the individual stations. I don't think it should come down to the federal government telling us to do or not do anything, because that's just how I am. It's just the way I operate.
It does seem like what you're talking about, it could become kind of a slippery slope where it's like, okay, well, we find this part of commercials annoying too. So let's just say you can't do that anymore.
Right, can't have any flashy lights or anything like that.
Yeah, it seems like if they start doing that, they could, you know, keep doing more stuff.
Yeah, let's go ahead and take a call, shall we? Let's see. We're going to pick up the line here. Hello, you're on the air with Computer Guru.
Yeah, is this Mike and Crystal?
It is.
This is Randy. I've been good for a year, and computer's been good. I have a Tucson interesting thing that happened on Thursday night with the weird lights in Tucson.
Okay.
I don't know if you got in on that, but the news story of the evening was 100 people saw these weird lights on the west side of Tucson at 9:30. So I said, well, maybe there's something on YouTube. So I went to YouTube and clicked on the most popular one, which said it was some kind of a giant lights over the trees of Tucson. So YouTube reminded me that I don't have a flash player and I can't watch this video. So I clicked. I just let it lead me along, and the YouTube site sent me to get my flash player, which took me a half hour. And I finally get to watch this video. I guess it was flash 10.1, something like that, 10.4.
Right.
And then I get to watch this video. Looked a lot like an airplane to me. I was kind of sad.
So anticlimactic.
So now, ever since then, if I click on Internet Explorer, Windows security thing comes on and tells me that my Internet Explorer is a Trojan, and it will not open.
Awesome.
Sorry. So maybe I clicked on the wrong thing.
Well, you probably didn't click on the wrong thing. Probably what happened is you had sort of a dormant infection that required a newer flash player to actually to take place, which happens every so often. And unfortunately, without knowing exactly which infection you have, it's going to be hard for me to tell you how to resolve that. However, there are some tools. Is the machine functional at all? Can you get around?
Yeah, I'm on it right now. I can read exactly what the message says. It says that this is the Microsoft Security's Essential Alert, and it gives me this big red X screen, and it says, this is program is dangerous, executes commands from an attacker. And that if you click on the information part, it tells me that the actual Trojan is called Internet Explorer. I Explore I explore.exe is the Trojan.
Awesome.
Isn't that great?
Do you have another browser installed on the machine?
I clicked on Firefox. It says the same thing. Firefox EXE is a Trojan.
Oh, okay. So you've got a rogue antivirus infection.
So how do I get rid of that?
You don't. At least not by yourself. Unless, if you can get to my website, there's a tools section, like a links and free stuff.
Yeah, I have run Avast on it from a boot, and it didn't find anything. And I ran Malwarebytes, I didn't find anything.
Oh, you're in trouble then.
So I don't know if this is that really Microsoft security, or is that just one of those stupid viruses pretending to be Microsoft security?
Well, it probably actually is Microsoft security, all right? Oh. The anti... my brain is not working. Hold on, let me drink caffeine here.
Yeah, get some coffee.
Microsoft Security Essentials.
Okay.
Chances are, though, is what's happened is Security Essentials is confuzzled. It thinks that everything that's an executable is an infection.
Yeah.
And that's possible. I haven't seen it with Security Essentials. I've actually seen it with other antiviruses before.
And I'm on Windows XP, by the way, with a dial-up, so I can't believe I can get something that dangerous on a dial-up. But...
No, you can still get it, just slower.
Yeah.
So, you should probably bring it down. Let me look at it.
Okay.
And we can get you straightened up and cleaned up. And I'm still running the antivirus special, by the way. It's cheaper than normal.
Cheaper than normal.
Right.
For the paranormal lights out there, I would say be cautious.
Yeah. Well, the difference is that when I say it's cheaper than normal, it doesn't mean that it's just some airplane flying low.
Yeah, there should be some better picture than that. I sacrificed my whole computer for watching an airplane land. This airplane's landing at Davis Monthan.
That's not a UFO.
And there goes my computer.
Yeah, well, thanks for the call. Bring it on by. Let me look at it.
And one more quick thing is that Toshiba TV actually has a button that will level out the volume if the people try to raise it for commercials.
Well, that's pretty interesting. Oh, yeah, and I think Magnavox does that as well. The older Magnavoxes used to do that.
Yeah, you have to dig through your information book that comes with the TV, and there's a certain setting that you can choose that will make all things the same volume.
Yeah, well, I know that they used to offer that with some TVs, but if my TV doesn't do it, I'll tell you that much.
Okay, you guys have a good day. Thank you.
Thanks for the call.
Bye.
If you want to be part of the show, 751-1041. We'd love to talk with you about whatever technology issues you might be having. We're going to talk about some TV here, actually. Google TV. And Apple TV and other TV. Anyway, stick around. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Computer Guru Show. My name's Mike. Here to deal with your technology needs and treat you like a real person in the process. Give us a call, 751-1041, if you'd like to be part of the show, and we can see what we can do to answer any of your issues. We'll unissue-fy you, because so many people have issues.
Including you.
Yeah, well, right now I'm having issues with the KQTH network as far as getting online.
I'm not having any issues like that.
Yeah, I don't want to hear it. So, here's the deal. Is that at the old studio, before we moved into this new, fancy, state-of-the-art, awesome-looking studio, I could get online pretty easy. Not so much anymore.
And the old studio is much more cave-like.
Yeah, I mean,
there were no windows.
No windows. Actually, you know what? I miss the old studio. I like the old studio.
I kind of do, too. Especially since it's a lot closer to my house.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm all irritated now because I use an instant messenger to communicate with Crystal as far as who's calling and a brief description of their problem. And at the moment, it isn't working. Well, it is now, but it has been not working the entire show so far. So I've just been guessing on who I'm talking to. Interestingly enough, they sort of have a corporate policy to lock me out of here, which is probably why it wasn't working. But it never stops me from getting online. So let's take another call here. We're going to talk to Joe. Hello, Joe. How are you doing?
Hi. Fine, thanks. How are you?
I'm wonderful. How may I help you?
Great. I was calling. I just actually had this problem fix itself, but I'm wondering if it's a problem even though it's fixed. I have a Gmail account and I have a university account. I have my university email going into the Gmail account.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering what was going on because I usually get a lot of email, haven't been receiving anything. And about 5 minutes ago, I received 30 emails. And some as far back as the 29th at 5 p.m.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah. I would get like one or two here or there, but nothing. And all of a sudden, these 30 emails came up, and I'm wondering, is that normal?
All right. So, how are you checking your email?
I go to my Gmail, and it also syncs up to my BlackBerry, so that I can, when something comes in, it comes up on the BlackBerry.
Okay. So you have a university account that you're checking with the Gmail account.
Yeah.
And you suddenly got a whole bunch of messages all at once in your Gmail account.
Yes. And even if you go to my university account, it actually forwards everything over automatically, so none of them appear in my inbox at all anyways. So if I were to go there, I wouldn't see anything anyways.
Right.
Everything goes right over. But I was wondering, because I get quite a few emails, and nothing happened, and all of a sudden...
Well, I'm just going to have to take a guess on this, and because I don't know exactly how it's set up and all of that, so I'll give you, let's just say, an educated guess. We'll eliminate some possibilities based off of what we know in the world.
Okay.
I would suggest that it's way more likely that there was some sort of a transfer agent problem or a mail server problem on the university side than there is that Google suddenly stopped working for you for a couple of days.
Okay.
So I imagine that maybe there was some type of an issue where mail got hung up in the queue on the university side and then finally just went through.
Okay.
But yep. I mean, I really can't imagine that there is some issue large enough to cause a Google server to misbehave for longer than a minute or two.
Okay. And you know what? I mean, I will probably confirm that then on Monday. I'll just ask a few other people and see if they have the same problem then. If they have sort of the same setup as I do.
Well, I would like to know that. But, it just seems to me that that's the most likely explanation for what's going on there.
Okay, good. Gosh, all right. Well, that sounds very good to me.
Well, thank you very much.
Oh, you're quite welcome.
Have yourself a wonderful day.
You do the same.
All right, bye.
Bye.
Oh, what a day. I'm drinking my caffeine, so it's all good.
You're awfully cheery, and it kind of scares me.
I know. I've been in a really good mood the last couple of days, which is really weird.
I agree.
Yeah, because normally I'm a
little weirded out right now.
A little cranky.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
And when you're not cranky, you're not usually, like, as cheerful as you are right now.
Really?
I mean, it's not that you're, like, you know, you're just, like, mellow, I guess.
Yeah, I'm usually pretty calm. And what's funny is that it's similarly to the people saying that, you know, I'm just pretty chilled, you know, and patient, usually. It's amazing. I get like three people a week that come into the shop, and they'll be like, oh, are you the one on the radio? I'll be like, yeah. And they'll be like, you're way younger than I thought you'd be. Do I really sound that old?
I don't think so, but...
Oh, man. I mean, it's...
I don't know.
People think I'm like 50 or something.
I don't think you sound that old.
I don't know what the deal is. But apparently I sound old on the radio.
Well, maybe that or you just look young. Except that if they're thinking that you're 50, that is...
I don't know. They never give an age. They just say, you know, I'm younger than I thought.
So maybe they just think you look younger.
That could be it. That could be a compliment.
You might just be a young-looking guy.
So I can either take it as a compliment that I look younger than I sound, or I can take it as a compliment that I sound older than I, or an insult as I sound older than I am.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's not an insult. I don't know. But it's the same reaction from everybody. It's not like there's a different reaction. It's if they come in the next shop and they ask, oh, are you the one on the radio? And I say yes, I know exactly the words that are going to come out of their mouth next.
Oh, you look younger.
Yeah, I thought you'd be older.
You know, at least they're not saying that you're uglier than you sound. That would be a real insult.
Well, I do have a face for radio. So, oh my God. So I sound old, apparently, is really what it is. Now, there's somebody's making a big deal about this. Did you hear about the shooting in Texas? That somebody went all crazy with an AK-47 in Texas?
Did it happen this week?
I believe so.
Then no.
All right, so apparently at the University of Texas in Austin, somebody decided to go to school with an AK-47 and start shooting people, and then shot himself. You would think that the news would be about him going in there and shooting people.
Yeah.
Right? But there's a certain spinoff of the news that's saying, You know how we could tell he was going to shoot somebody? He didn't have a Facebook account.
What?
Yes. So people
that's
are drawing the
ridiculous thing.
People
I've
are drawing
heard.
The correlation between not
have
having
a Facebook account
and being a killer.
Because you don't have obviously, a Facebook account, you must be evil.
Obviously, he was antisocial. He was a loner. You could tell that he had liked trench coats by his non-Facebook page.
Yeah, because you know, so, nobody that is ever going to do a bad thing is ever going to have a Facebook account.
Should not be this intertwined with the fabric of society. It
yeah,
should
that's
not
kind
be
of a little bit much.
That involved where you would be like, you know what? If you don't have a Facebook account, I can't trust you because you might be a killer. You
I know,
might
I can't go look up all your personal information on Facebook.
if you don't have a Facebook account, you obviously lack social skills.
Oh my gosh.
Rather than the people that would just talk to each other in person. Stick around, we'll be right back after the news. Welcome back to the Computer Guru Show. My name's Mike, here to do what your technology needs and treat you like a real person in the process. Give us a call, 751-1041, if you would like to be part of the show. Crystal brought up a good point during the break that maybe he was the shooter who wasn't on Facebook was really upset because nobody was going to his MySpace page anymore.
That's what you get for not checking my MySpace anymore.
Oh, my God. Yeah, MySpace was, you know, it was huge. And it's still fairly big in its own right. But
yeah.
I mean, it is so dated. It is so like last year.
You know, I liked how you could do your whole profile thing on MySpace, though. I did like that, where you could, you know, have the background and have a theme.
That was actually the biggest problem with MySpace, actually.
Really?
Yeah, because
that
people
was my
would
favorite
em-
part.
People would embed malicious code, viruses, into their profiles. And they didn't know it. It was the tools that they, you know, the Pimp My MySpace page utilities. They would inject bad stuff into everybody's pages and then infect everybody.
That's no good. There was this page that helped you to create, like, your own, like, profile.
Right.
That's the one I would usually use. So I'd get to, I don't know, I hope I didn't
you
set
were part
viruses
of the
on any computers.
Yes, you were part of the problem.
I feel horrible.
Now I know why you don't have a computer.
No, I didn't have a computer way before MySpace.
It's because you were the killer of machines. All right. So, do you have one of those Android phones?
Nope.
If you do, fellow listeners, if you do, then you might be interested to know what's happening with your data. Now, you notice when you install an app on one of these phones, it says, hey, this application will have access to all of these types of data available to it. You know, like some of them say they'll have access to your the call state, so it knows whether or not you're in a phone call, or, you know, GPS locations, stuff like that. Well, it turns out that somebody built this really nifty utility. It's called Taint Droid. And you can install it, and it'll tell you what the applications are doing with your data. Not necessarily... here's the problem, is that you install the application, and it says, hey, this application has access to look at this information on your phone, which is fine if it's just looking. But the point is that they found that some applications are not only just looking at that data, but taking that data and sending it off to advertisers. So, for instance, if you're, as an example, and a fake example, by the way, you have, like, some rinky-dink Twitter app on your phone. Not the real Twitter one, not the official Twitter application, but one of the other ones that came out earlier. That particular application knows where you're at, knows your GPS location, has access to like where you're at and all that stuff, and they could be sending that to advertisers to say you're at this location at this time. Now, under normal circumstances, that's probably not necessarily a bad thing, or, you know, it's not great, but it's nothing harmful. And the reason I'm saying that is because we're going to get to something that Google's doing in a little bit. But there are other applications that have access to more sensitive information, like your address book or other files that are stored on there or passwords that are saved for websites. So these are things where the developers need to be a little more cautious, and Google, I think, needs to do a better screening process as far as what applications are doing with your data. Now, Google hasn't had a chance to really address this yet just because it came out a couple days ago and it's being released. Their study is being released soon. I suspect that Google will probably address this in such a way that they will disallow access to send data out of the phone to certain advertisers, or they'll make it harder for the applications to actually collect data from the phone. Like, for instance, there's a video game that I installed on there, you know, because I was bored and sitting on the couch one night. I'm just like, hey, I'm going to install this app and play a video game. And I noticed during the install process, it said, this particular, you know, game is going to have access to my address book, to my phone book. And I'm like, well, why does it need that? It's just this silly little game. And so I didn't install that one. And I think you should be more careful about the applications that you install on your phone, whether or not it's an iPhone or an Android phone or a BlackBerry. You should be careful with that because people use their phones for everything. You know, phones have lots of data in them now.
Yeah, and if that game's going to go in and get your address book, what is it going to do with all that information?
That's a great question. And that's where this application, the Taint Droid, will let you know, because it'll give you real-time access. It'll show you exactly what's happening with the data on your phone. So you can check it out. It's available on the market if you have an Android phone. I'm going to run it on mine later just to see what data's going where on my phone. I'm really curious about that. Now, Google's actually got a plan that they're going to do something that's both interesting and frightening at the same time. The plan that Google has is to be able to answer your question before you ask it.
Are they going to put microchips in our minds?
No. It turns out it's going to all be based on patterns and other things. For instance, most people have smartphones these days, which have GPS locations in them. Right?
Yes.
Okay. And GPS, you know, the phone knows where you're at all the time. Right? It says, oh, you are here. You know, turn left if you want to go somewhere else. It knows where you're at. So if Google can find a way to safely, without violating too many privacy laws, to say, okay, we know where you're at, and we know about, you know, about your history and your patterns. Like, say, for instance, you go to lunch between 11 and 11:30. You leave for lunch almost every day. Right? Let's just say that it knows that.
Okay. How does it know that?
Well, it knows where you're at with your phone.
Oh, because it's tracking me.
So it's tracking you.
Okay.
All right. So it knows that you leave where you are most of the time at 11 to 11:30, and you show up at a restaurant somewhere in the vicinity at a certain time, and it knows what types of restaurants those are, of course.
Of course.
So what's not to stop it from getting to the point where you could just be going somewhere and you look at your phone somewhere around 11:30 or so, and your phone says, you're probably hungry right now, and we know what types of food you like. Here's what's nearby.
I would be totally creeped out.
So apparently the goal is that Google says they want to be able to answer your search request before you even ask it. I think it's cool. Technologically speaking, that is really cool.
I really don't like the fact that they're tracking my every move, though.
They're already tracking your every move.
I don't like that, though. I don't think my phone has a GPS, so I think
all cell phones have GPS.
You know what? Well, I guess this was a few years ago, but my phone got stolen, and I asked them if they could, like, track it, and they told me no.
No, they won't turn it on for you unless they dial 9.
Oh, no, I was trying to get them to turn it off because I didn't want them to ring up charges, but I was like, can you find out where it is?
And what I'm saying is that they won't turn on the location service on your phone. They don't care. They want you to buy another one.
That's just mean. I loved that phone, and they weren't selling it anymore.
Now, if you had a Droid phone, there's a location service, an application you can install on your Droid. By the way, if you have a Droid phone and you want to locate your phone, there's a Droid locator app where you can just send it a text message either from the Google voice page or from another cell phone, mm-hmm. and it'll do all kinds of cool things. Like, depending on which code you send, you can have it wipe all the data on the phone. You can have it turn on the GPS and show you a map of where that phone is. Or you can just have it be irritating or lock the phone.
Yeah.
So it's a cool service. And, you know,
how do you just go onto a computer to access it?
You can go onto a computer or another cell phone.
Okay.
And locate your phone and issue commands to it. Now, all of the smartphones have some type of feature like this. BlackBerries have a built-in service for this. And iPhones with the Mobile Me stuff will allow you to do something similar, where you'll be able to either wipe the phone remotely, where it'll just clear all the data off of it, so that even if they do have your phone, they can't get any of your encrypting or incriminating information. The other option is that you can just have it lock the phone. Let's say, for instance, you don't have a password on your phone. You can set one remotely so that the phone will lock itself, and unless they enter the right code, they can't get into the phone. Or the other option is that you can geolocate the phone and say, I want to know where you're at on this map right now, which could be dangerous. But
the only thing, like, if your phone went missing or stolen or whatever, I think the geolocating one would be the more, because otherwise, I mean, you can still just get it to be shut off.
Yeah.
You know, because you can just make a phone call and get it shut off. Well, but if you can locate where it is, especially with how expensive phones are now.
It depends on what you're interested in. Most people are just interested in keeping their private data private. So they could just wipe the phone. They don't care about that. They pay $50 for their deductible if they're not on an iPhone. And they get a replacement phone.
Oh, because I guess with smartphones, you have a lot of personal info on there.
Yes. I mean, I use mine. It's a regular computer. It's got all kinds of stuff on it. And, you know, customer data, stuff like that, that, you know, I want to keep safe. So keep a password on it. And I have the wipe service on it if I need it. You know, if I lose the phone, which I don't do very often. Normally I break them. But if I lose the phone, then I can wipe it out remotely. Let's take a call here. Let's talk to Jason. Hey, Jason, how you doing?
Oh, pretty good, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing great.
I got a question for you. I had a virus like a month ago, and I got it removed by using Malwarebytes. And then last week, the computer shut down on me. And when I restarted back up, it would just go like into where safe mode's at. It's a black screen. And it just starts counting, and it won't go any further than that. It kind of loops back and forth.
Right.
So then I tried doing a system restore on it, because I did the recovery disk and everything.
Right.
And then when I tried loading the recovery disk, it starts formatting the hard drive, and then an error message pops up, and that's as far as I get. I can't get...
What's the error message?
It's a bunch of numbers. It's 0x200, 1100, and then 100 is the code number. And I looked on Google, and I really can't find anything that refers to that error message, so I thought I'd call you and see if maybe you have run into that before.
Is there any, like, plain English stuff next to that 0x something?
I think it's just failure to... I don't remember what it says in English, though. I have to double-check that. I'm not in front of it right now to bring it up to tell
okay.
you.
Get me an error message, an exact error message.
Okay.
And you can email it to me, radio@azcomputerguru.com.
Okay.
And I will email you back the solution, or at least what the problem is, so then we know how to move forward. Most often when we see these types of problems where you end up with a cycling machine on XP, and then it doesn't install, is usually a failing hard drive. But depending on what that error code is, it could be a memory chip. Now, if it said something like, you know, failed to read in-page data, or something like kernel fault in non-paged area, then that's memory. Now, if it says something like unmountable boot device or unable to write to the hard drive, then, of course, it's a hard drive issue.
Oh, okay.
So get me some error messages, and I will help you out with that.
All right, I appreciate it. What was that email address again?
radio@azcomputerguru.com.
Got it.
Or you can send a message on Twitter, because I'm an AZ Computer Guru on Twitter. You can do it any way you want. Now, is that the only computer you have?
No, I have another one.
Okay, because if that's the only computer you have, you can send in any emails.
Yeah.
But you can also call down to the shop, 304-8300. We'll help you out.
Okay, I appreciate it.
All right, thank you very much for the call.
Thank you. No problem.
If you want to be part of the show, 751-1041. We would love to help you out with whatever technology issues you might be having. Once again, 751-1041. We'll be right back after this break. Welcome back to the Computer Guru Show. My name is Mike, here to deal with your technology needs and treat you like a real person in the process. That's what we're doing. Give us a call, 751-1041. I'd love to help you out with whatever technology issues you might be having. Unfortunately, Randall is not here today. He's home dealing with stuff, home issues. Home issues, they suck.
Yeah, they're never really good.
Don't like the home issues. So, I got an email that asked about unlimited data plans for cell phone carriers. because they're like, is there really such any such thing as an unlimited data plan through your cell phone provider? And it's sort of a yes and no answer. For instance, if you happen to have like a Droid X through Verizon, the answer is yes. On that device, it is totally unlimited. You could download a terabyte of information, which is a lot, by the way. If you don't know what that is, that's 1,024 gigabytes is a terabyte. It's a lot of data. Now, most of the providers set a 5 gigabyte cap on your data usage. Now, that's particularly when you're using like a laptop to connect to a cellular network. So if you have like a little air card in there, or you're tethering off of your device, you have a 5 gigabyte limit. Now, once you hit that limit, that's where things get different depending on the carrier. For instance, if you have a regular broadband account through Verizon and you hit 5 gigs and you go over, then you are charged an overage amount. So you get charged extra money. Now, if you have a month-to-month or a prepay wireless account, same card, same laptop, and you hit your 5 gig limit, suddenly the internet just stops. So they just cut you off once you hit your 5 gig limit. Now, if you're tethering through a Droid phone, right, using the official Verizon tethering application, then your phone will still get data at 5 gig, but your laptop, if you go over, will incur an additional fee. So you got to be a little careful about that. If you're using, let's say you have a rooted phone, and you're using a not official tethering application, then your phone actually doesn't know the difference between its own data and the laptop data, and thus you were not charged for an overage. Pretty interesting stuff. Now, if you have AT&T, or I'll say AT&T does tiers, right? So their highest one they offer is 5 gigabytes. You thought I said something else. If you hit the 5 gigabyte limit, then you're going to be charged additional fee with the AT&T plan. Now, that's if you can afford the 5 gigabyte plan, because it's kind of expensive. If you have Cricket or one of the other Cricket-like providers, then what they do is once you hit your 5 gigabyte limit, they just throttle you, meaning that it slows down to a crawl. It still works, but once you hit that limit, it makes it very, very slow for you to do anything. But you can still function if you need to for at least crucial items. So the truth is that if you're using a laptop and you're trying to connect to the internet through a cell phone network, you can pretty much count on 5 gigabytes being your limit. Now, a lot of people think, well, that's a huge amount of information. And it is. So normally the people that would complain about this are those that are downloading movies or doing some type of torrenting or other not necessarily legal activities on their computer. So they're using more bandwidth than the average user. Most often we see people that are using about 1 gigabyte a month or so. And that's just for normal usage, checking your email, getting online, looking stuff up, just normal everyday stuff. Once you start getting into streaming video and all this other stuff, then your data usage goes way up. So if you're watching, let's say, Netflix on your iPad, tethered to your iPhone, then you can pretty much count on a whole bunch of data, and you're going to watch a few movies, and then you're going to be out of bandwidth for the month and either pay extra or be cut off, depending on which plan you have. So hopefully that answers the question. If unlimited data plans are hard to come by, especially in the cell phone world. Now, if you're wired, yeah, go nuts. Do anything you want. Unless you live on the East Coast. That's just how that works. Yeah, East Coast, they tend to cap you a lot, which is kind of interesting. And it's probably because Verizon owns all of the wired networks out on the East Coast. So don't be downloading movies and getting yourself in trouble. Yeah, you know, I'm looking at you.
Yeah, because I'm a big movie downloader on my non-computer.
Yeah?
Yeah.
On your phone.
My non-smartphone?
Your non-smartphone. All it downloads is dumb movies. Like Dumb and Dumber.
Oh, I hate that movie.
That wasn't that bad. All right, so Microsoft marks the anniversary of Security Essentials, by the way, with some statistics. They decided to release some data. And it turns out that they have detected 400 million threats since Security Essentials has been released.
How long has that been?
It's been a year.
That's a lot of threats in a year.
Yeah, well, at least in the latest version of it, yeah. That's a whole lot of infections, 400 million. The scary statistic is that they said that only 366 million of those threats did the users opt to get rid of.
Why wouldn't you get rid of a threat?
That's a really good question.
I would want to get rid of it.
They don't say why. They just say that they detected 400 million threats and the users decided to get rid of 366 million. So that means that there's like 33 million infections out there that were intentionally left.
Wow.
For some reason or another. Now, it could have been false positives on some of those, where the antivirus says, hey, this is a problem. And the user says, oh, I know better. That's not a problem. But chances are that a majority of those were just people being like, yeah, whatever. I'm clicking yes anyway. You know, I'm going to click around this so I can continue to do what you're telling me not to do.
Is that kind of like when it says you're about to go over a secure connection kind of thing? Or is it, but it would say there's something, like, it might be unsecure.
We've detected the threat. Would you like to deal with it now? And they're like, no, I'm trying to work right now.
I'm trying to do this, so just leave it alone.
No, leave it alone. And that's part of the problem with older versions of Windows, especially in XP, where you were bombarded, and Vista was really, really bad about this, is where you were bombarded with messages. You know, all day long it was telling you, hey, this is happening, and click yes or no or whatever, trying to get you to be involved in the process. It turns out that involving the user, I mean, no offense to the users, but involving the user to the degree that Vista was trying to do, and XP to a certain extent, is bad. Because it's just like you get desensitized to it. You no longer pay attention. Something pops up on the screen, you click what you would normally click to get it to go away. You don't even know what it was.
Yeah, you're not even reading
what
it says.
You don't read it. All the time we get people to bring machines in, and they say, and this error popped up on the screen, and everything fell apart. Okay? What was the error message? I don't know, I just clicked past it. That doesn't help. The reason it doesn't help is because that error is telling you what's wrong. And yeah. Once you move past that, chances are you're not going to reproduce it. That error isn't going to occur the same way again, at least not the one that caused the problem in the first place.
Because then it's going to cause new errors.
Because you have different errors after that. Right? And sometimes you don't get errors at all. It's just the machine's non-functional at that point. So you should read what's on the screen in front of you. If something pops up, and especially if it's like red. Now, in 7, they changed the color codes for errors. Right, so if you've got
kind of like teachers grading papers,
kind of,
because red is bad.
All the errors in XP and Vista look the same, right? If it was informational, or if it was an alert that said, "Oh my goodness, something bad is happening," or if it was something as simple as, "Hey, would you like to set your homepage?" All of them look the same, right? And it's you get used to it. It's the same error message. Doesn't matter. You don't know how severe it is based off of the error message. And then you just get used to it and click past them, and you get yourself infected, or you kill the machine in some way, or you don't notice something that's important. Now, in 7, they changed that by making it so that if it's a severe thing, it's like bright red, and it gets your attention. And less severe things are a different color. And some of them are blue, some of them are green, and some of them are just gray, you know, depending on how bad it is, how important it is that you answer this question properly. So it's important to read the messages that are in front of you. Don't get over, you know, just don't get desensitized and not pay attention. Now, luckily, in 7, they don't bother you as much. You know, it doesn't pop up as many messages in order that you have to respond to. So it helps out quite a bit. Now, so there's lots of infections out there. And, you know, there's people saying, well, that just goes to show how vulnerable Microsoft systems are. Yeah. Not really. The issue is that there's so many Windows machines out there that's the only place you're going to attack. And it's just the way it works. Totally makes sense. Stick around for more of the Computer Guru Show coming up right after the news. Thanks for listening right here on 104.1 The Truth, Tucson's News Talk FM.